This episode of Misadventures in Marketing is brought to you by the American Marketing Association, San Francisco. AMASF is a member-run organization that has been serving the Bay Area marketing community for over 80 years. Through programs, events, workshops, and discussions that introduce the latest trends and developments in the industry, to networking events that bring together the best marketing minds in the region, AMASF diligently works to foster professional learning and career advancement opportunities for all of its members. Joining is easy. To become a member of AMASF, go to amasf.org. That's amasf.org, and click on Get Involved on the top menu, then become a member. For just $199 a year, you'll get access to events, resources, credentialed learning opportunities, and a community of fellow marketers who will help you expand your network and advance your career. The AMASF membership, the investment you make for the career you love.
The FU is funnel. So it's
and you call that tofu? Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, it's tofu. Okay. Tofu, mofu. I don't call it that. Everybody else in the world calls it that, but you. It's tofu, mofu, and bofu.
Hello, and welcome to the Misadventures in Marketing podcast, presented by the American Marketing Association San Francisco chapter. I'm Steve Haney, a fractional CMO in Silicon Valley.
And I'm Peter Farrago, a high-tech marketing executive in the Bay Area. Each week, Steve and I come together to discuss all things in high-tech marketing.
We share our own experiences running marketing teams with a special focus on technology startups, our successes, our failures, what worked, what didn't. We'll also be inviting our colleagues on to the show every once in a while and hopefully impart some wisdom along the way. Peter, how are you?
I'm well. I'm doing well. How are you today?
Things are going pretty well. This tariff craziness is getting a little bit grating. I don't know. Is it affecting things in your world?
You know, my investment portfolio tanked. Tariffs mean ultimately an increase in prices for consumers. So it's always radical when you basically put tariffs on every other trading partner in the world all at once and seemingly without rhyme, reason, or consistency.
Yeah. I just had a prospect pull out because they are based in China. As you might imagine, everything kind of just like flew up into the air. So not great stuff, but on to funner topics. So today, Peter, is our very first game show edition of Misadventures in Marketing, and it's called Name That Tech Marketing Acronym. Acronym.
So here's
how it's going to work. I'm going to throw out an acronym. You're going to say what it stands for. You're going to get one point for that. And then you're going to have to define it. And on a scale from 1 to 5, I will give you points on how accurate your definition of the term is. And then we'll see at the end of the show how well you did. You get 3 lifeline calls. So you may want to think of the people you want to call in case you can't identify the acronym or define it well enough. And we'll take it from there. And you will win fabulous prizes depending upon how well you do today. Sound good?
Yeah, I think the calls could be problematic. I could can I text or Slack people or just use the internet? Probably the internet's not as
your call will be to chat GPT. Well, that's kind of unfair. No, I think it would be funner if you put them on speakerphone and you let them know.
Like it's the middle of a work day, so I don't know if they're going to be available.
They're going to be too happy to pick up. But you do know some pretty powerful, smart folks.
But calling people out of the blue in the middle of a work day is going to be hard.
You think so? Okay. Well, maybe then we won't do that part. But whatever. It's a podcast. We can edit it. So we'll see how things go. So here we go. Acronym, this is going to be an easy one. PPC.
That's price per click,
and it's pay per click.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Pay-per-click. It's digital advertising. It's online advertising. And it implies that the buyer of the advertising will pay based on users having clicked on the ad. It's performance oriented versus brand, which is based on impression. So typically you want to pay only for clicks and not just for the ad showing on a web page.
Right. So some type of online or digital ad, and you only pay when the prospect clicks, and that is
yeah, you get billing in the campaign. It's like, or you're already doing, you know, you're buying it on a PPC basis, say inside of Google or something. Tip.
Okay, so I, for your description, I'm going to give you 5 whole points. Yeah. All right, here we go. CTR.
Well, CTR is click through rate. Again, digital advertising.
Bing, 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 bing. Well done. Yeah. And what's click through rate?
The click through rate is the number of times you get clicks divided by the number of total times the ad is shown. So it's like a ratio or a division. It's like 100
clicks. It's a percentage. It's represented as a percentage.
Yeah. If you get 100 clicks, you know, for 1,000 impressions, you have a 10% click-through rate. It can also be used, you know, it's often used, say, in email.
Right. So what's your rule of thumb on these? What do you like to see
God,
your click
I don't
rate?
Know. You know, I mean, yes, there are rules of thumbs and ranges, but to me, it's all relative, meaning, you know, we might have a 30, and so you might say, well, how do I improve that? How do I make my content better? How do I improve my email deliverability?
I have a very, very long tortured story about email marketing system I inherited that had millions and millions of names in it that had been around for literally decades, and the honeypots that had been planted in there. And it's long, long tortured tale.
Sometimes you have to go through a re-opt-in process when you get a shady list like that.
It was a dark, dark period in my career. Anyway, okay, SERP, S-E-R-P.
Yeah, SERP, we're talking about world of search, Google, yeah. Typically Google, it's search engine results page.
Yes! Well done, sir.
Yeah, so your SERP is, so search engine result page is basically the page the user sees after they put in some kind of a search term or phrase into Google.
And of course, this is all being turned on its head, right? Because the AI results are coming up.
Yeah, the people who used to find things on the internet by going to Google and searching are now just going straight to ChatGPT or other places, and they're just getting their answers.
Well, no, even on the Google SERP at the top, they have what they now call an AI summary. But all of that is nosedived because of Google switching over to this AI summary. So getting traffic from searches is not good for marketers right now. It's really, really bad.
I guess the way it's a little bit of a chain reaction, if I think it through, it's like ChatGPT came out with the LLM and you just go there. And instead of getting a link that you click on after you ask a question, it just gives you the total answer. It's, you know, pulling the content from underneath, summarizing, giving it to you. So it obviates the need to use search. And then I think in reaction to that, Google with Gemini was like, oh, no, my search business is under attack. I need to offer LLM results right on the page the way you described. So the question becomes over time, where are LLMs pulling the information from, the citations, and can you be a linked citation there? But yes, it's going to affect things. But to go back to SERPs, because I still think it's relevant, it's not like it's going away completely. The search engine results page is basically the page that gets rendered or displayed to the user after they put a search term in, and then you want to rank as high as you can as a company or an offering in what are called the organic search results. Those are the ones that you don't pay for as an ad. So it's usually on the kind of more the two-thirds of the left-hand side of the page, and you see like the top five. And if you don't see what you like there, sometimes you click to the second page, but most people don't. And then on the right hand rail and sometimes above, they have ad spots that, you know, you can buy, and that's the search ad stuff.
It's a good transition into the next question. SEO, easy one. Layout.
Well, yeah.
Real layout.
Search, search engine optimization. It's the set of things you do to attempt to rank higher in organic search on SERPs. And it includes like making sure your website is loading fast enough and performant, making sure that you interface with Google, Google's indexing. You have to put something called a robots.txt file. You kind of put metadata on your pages so that you're basically telling Google, you know, who you are and what topics you should be associated with. And then the other real key, honestly, to it, which is probably the most important thing in the long run, is getting what are called high quality backlinks. And that's basically having reputable websites pointing back to your website. Right. And all of that combined influences whether or not Google is telling a search person searching to go to your site or not. I typically work hard on SEO at almost every startup I go to. It's great. It's a great thing when you can build it up. It just takes a while, and you gotta. It's a fair amount of work. It's easier to just spend money on search ads, but that doesn't pay back in the long run.
It's usually the first thing, you know, I do if it's not done.
I think in tech marketing, you do a lot of content in SEO.
LTV.
LTV, it's lifetime value, and it basically is, or yeah, it's always consumer, but I guess LTV can be applied to a customer.
No, if you've got a SaaS business, it definitely applies to, small to medium business and even enterprises who are on a SaaS program with you.
But the concept is really like, how much money do you make from a customer or user over their lifetime with you? And the, you know, the thing you're trying to do is pay less than you make from each user to be ROI positive. They didn't know if you were going to say it later, but CAC is customer acquisition cost. So you're comparing your CAC to LTV. I don't think it's really an equation as much it is a ratio between CAC and LTV.
That's pretty good. I'll give you the full five for that. So, and it looks like you already earned the next one, which was CAC. Well done, young man.
Well,
and so
I was
that's
actually
one
trying to
point.
Talk, I was trying to talk around it because I thought it might be coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and last thing I want to do is deny you any points here. This is your time to shine. So customer acquisition costs. So what is that? How does it work? How do you do it?
Yeah, it can be fuzzy and messy to measure. You know, CAC is easier if you're just doing paid media, meaning like I'm going to spend $1,000, say, on a campaign, and I can measure, you know, how many users I acquire, and then you can look at over time how much money you make from them. And it depends on the business. You know, in the mobile gaming world, which was in A, mobile is big, and B, gaming is by far the large category, there was a lot of work on CAC versus LTV. Because consumers were playing a lot of what were called free-to-play games. This is my motivational example. And so you would spend a certain amount of money acquiring users, and then you would have, I don't know, 100 users start today, and by the end of the month, I don't know, five of them might be spending money at a certain amount.
There's so a half life of those, yeah.
Yeah, you're basically just trying to most mobile apps were also showing ads, so you know, whether your user is going to buy something from you or not, you're going to try to make money one way or the other, either showing ads. So basically, you're adding up all of that. You're adding up the cost of, say, acquiring them against how much money you make in total, in this case, blended between ad revenue and what are called in-app purchases, consumers buying things in the game. And so that's a big business sense. It's also like in economics, it's marginal cost versus marginal return. If anyone's, you know, done the academic beat, that's kind of CAC versus LTV is the same thing. You should be willing to spend all the way up to break even, basically.
Right. So, but what would that, because I've not done anything in mobile gaming in the modern era. So what would that be, though? You say, well, I know I can, on average, keep somebody around for X amount of time and make $2.25 off of them. And so I'm willing to pay $2 customer acquisition cost or $2.24.
Well, you spend all the way up to break even. It's a curve, right? So you spend all the way up. Some of them will blend. Some will be $1.80 and you'll make $2.25.
Right.
And then, of course, you're always trying to work on the product and trying to make it monetize better.
Mm-hmm.
But it depends. Like, you're adding up all your marketing costs, and then you're seeing how much incremental revenue you're driving from that.
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't do it on fixed cost spending, and you know, we can get into actual break-even analysis. But yeah, marginal cost versus marginal return is the underlying theory, which should say you should be willing to spend all the way up to, as long as you're making a profit, as long as you're getting back more than you're spending, you should be willing to spend all the way up to that boundary, that limit. That's the theory. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, as acting as a board member who's not too bright, I'm giving you a 4 on that one because I didn't follow.
Okay. Well, that's not on me.
Well, because I mean, I'm a dumb board member and I don't understand what you're saying. Right. So, you know, you're but too that's smart why, for me.
That's why I'm the operator and you're the dumb right. money.
That's right. Okay.
I never say that to the VCs, and luckily the VCs I work with are also usually very smart and they understand marginal cost versus marginal return. But
I say,
whatever. Yeah. Who knows who gave you your money for investing, Steve?
That's right. Okay. Here we go. BDR.
Yeah, BDR. I mean, in my world, we tend to call them SDR, but it's a person who prospects.
Well, no, what you got
to. I know. I'm getting to it. So it's either business development rep or a sales development rep, but it's someone who prospects.
Listen,
typically.
I'm going to put all these together because you're just hitting on all the points. So an SDR is a sales development rep. So there's another point for you there. And then what about an LDR? In the same category.
Well, I know two of the letters. LDR, that's a
lead development rep. I mean,
to me,
they're the same thing as an SDR to you, man.
There might be, you know, who knows, someone's going to call in. I'd be thrilled if someone called in. But someone's going to call in and tell us there is a difference. I guess in theory, the SDR is focused on the inbound leads and qualifying those that are coming to you, whereas a business development rep is more on outbound prospecting. If I had to kind of like distinguish between the two, I tend to use them interchangeably, and maybe that's wrong.
Well, with lead development rep, it's usually leads. This is the way I've always done it when I've set up this kind of organization at a company. It's leads we get in, and then we qualify them to turn them into MQLs.
I will say, like, for example, I had folks on my team, and they would do both. So meaning, like, if it was a light week of inbound, then they would start outbounding.
Right. Okay. Well done. That's a solid 5. Listen, B2B.
Yeah. B2B is business to business. It's businesses whose customers are other businesses, not consumers. Or by the way, there is even further, I've learned this, there's B2G, which is business to government, and there's B2D, business to developer. But generally, it's you have a product or a service for consumers, or you have a product or a solution or business for other businesses. I've done both. And, you know, whatever I've done more recently is what people think I do. And it's like, well, no, I spent the first over a decade of my career in consumer packaged goods. I've worked at ad agencies. Same. I've worked on big brands with big multi-million-dollar budgets, including television advertising, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, I've done all kinds of branding work, which sometimes gets, you know, more associated with consumer because it tends to be more important. I tend to consider, though, the difference tends to be with consumer stuff, that it's usually a lower involvement purchase decision, which just means the consumer doesn't go through as much choosing and research and vetting and evaluating. B2B is much longer and more intricate on average, and people need to be convinced of all kinds of, you know, ROI and usefulness and stuff. Anyway, B2B, business.
Right. And certainly within our sphere, it's usually big pieces of enterprise software that a company spends 6 to 7 to 8 figures on. And there's usually a whole bunch of people who are making the decision because you are committing big dollars and you're committing to a another entity to really partner with you, not so much sell you something, because you're probably buying a critical piece of infrastructure that's going to be part of your business going forward. So you do not make those decisions lightly, as opposed to the next one, which I'm just going to give you the point. B2C, business to consumer, which, like you said, is much more transactional, lower figure that a consumer makes, going back to what we were saying about like in-app purchases in a game, for example, or a candy bar at the checkout stand. And again, I kind of know from my years in the video game industry, ancient though they are, and your experience selling beef jerky in Costco's, it's a smaller commitment, smaller transaction that's run much more on impulse and brand, and very different dynamic there. Now, there are categories of this under, for example, B2B, as you were mentioning, there's B2G, which that's government selling. It'd be great to have a guest on, because that's a whole another world of stuff.
Very, very different. Yeah, I haven't very done different. A lot of government contract, defense contract type work. It is very intricate. That's a hard... You got to really understand how that system works and procurement and so on.
Yep. Exactly. Yep. And then there's B2B2C, meaning you're selling a big piece of software to a business.
This episode of Misadventures in Marketing is brought to you by Peak Bound Studio, the Bay Area video production house for high-impact marketing videos. Online video is quickly becoming the universal language of business and the primary medium through which marketers speak to their prospects. According to Forbes and market research firm Statista, 90% of all businesses are currently using online video in their marketing. And in 2025, 85% of those businesses will increase their spending in online video over last year. Enter Peakbound Studio. Peakbound Studio is not just another video production team. They are storytellers, visual artists, and high-tech experts rolled into one. They manage everything from the initial concept to the final edit. Your online video presence has to be responsive, vibrant, and constant to get the attention of prospects and spread your message into every corner of the marketplace. Peakbound makes sure your messages are unique, compelling, and pop in today's attention-scarce world. So whether you need brand storytelling, customer testimonials, corporate videos, or short-form social media content, Peakbound delivers videos that don't just look good, they work. Learn more at www.peakbound.studio. That's www.peakbound.studio. Peakbound Studio, the video production house that puts your online video to work.
That serves consumers.
The truth is, this is like B2B to C, sometimes B2B to D, whatever the customer's end user is. This is actually how you're taught from a classically trained standpoint. So you're talking about snack foods manufacturer I was at, and also Electronic Arts was a consumer packaged good, and we were going to retailers too. The reality is, in that world, you are responsible for not only selling into the channel to, say, retail or distribution partners. It could be brokers and distributors and retailers all the way through to the end user. So you are marketing directly to consumers and you're marketing into the channel. So like a good interesting example that everyone will get is pharmaceutical industry drugs. It was deregulated in maybe the 80s and the Reagan era. That's why you see these crazy long ads where they're like,
right,
you know, using this drug can include risk of seizure.
Right. All the disclaimers that goes at like 3x voice.
But it's like, ask your doctor about the purple pill. So that's a direct consumer ad campaign. But that is a company who is selling B2B2C. They have a direct to consumer part of that. And they're also pushing sales reps to hospitals, to doctor's offices. Sometimes it's the push versus pull part of your strategy.
Right.
You push into the channel, you pull it through with demand on the other end. So anyone who's classically trained has done B2B to C to B2B to X, and they get direct consumer, they get push-pull strategy. And that's why, you know, typically these classically trained marketers are very strategic and can mostly work in any.
I got a good example of that too in the world of software. I and my family belong to a big HMO here in Northern California, and there is a mindfulness app that most consumers know about, but I and my family get it for free through our HMO. So that's kind of a classic example of they're selling it, that software company is selling it B2B, and then Kaiser is also, I don't have to pay for the premium features of this mindfulness app. I get those by being a member.
You see it in credit cards too a lot. You know, it's like, hey, you get free rental car insurance or something if you use this credit card to book with Hertz or something.
Right. Right. Okay. So another layup here, MAS. It's what we all live in as marketers, an MAS.
This is what I don't know. Let me take a guess at least.
Yeah.
Huh.
You want me to give you a hint?
Sure.
HubSpot. Eloqua,
Eloqua,
Pardot.
Yeah, but those are marketing. Those are MAPS, marketing automation platforms.
You call them MAPS. I call them marketing automation systems. Well, I'm going to have to give you the points then. MAPS, marketing automation platform. So, what is a marketing automation platform?
Marketing automation platform. Basically, it's a set of functionality that allows you to interact with sales and work on stages of the funnel. So it's like one part analytics, basically put a snippet of Java on your website and it's trying to identify who's coming to your website because you're trying to figure out if it's inbound and it's a lead and this and that. And then you get into the notion of what's called lead scoring.
Right.
So there's a lead scoring functional piece. And by the way, all of this integrates, basically MAP always integrates into a CRM. So typically you're working with Salesforce is the big CRM people. There's lots, but
well,
usually
let's jump ahead a tiny bit. What does CRM stand for?
It's customer relationship management, and it's a software system. It's a system of record and it keeps track of all your accounts that you're calling on, all the activities. Salespeople are in it.
When you say mostly the salespeople use the CRM, we all use the CRM, don't get me wrong, but it's mostly the salespeople.
They're
and then
interacting
mostly the marketing people use the MAP.
Yes. That's, anyway, the point is it's a way for you to make sense of the audience coming into you and defining them at different stages and interacting with the sales team. It's basically a way of prioritizing who you talk to. You want to talk to bigger companies that are more interested now. And this is a way to do that. And, and also I'll say like the MAP is also important. The other concept that comes out of it is nurturing, because for those who are not interested today, but are valuable to
drip
you
campaigns,
want to
all that
yeah you
stuff,
want to
yeah.
kind of stay close to them and stay top of mind, or some people call it top of inbox, but basically you want to be able to nurture them along the way.
Okay, we're going to do a lightning round here. SEM,
search engine marketing.
Well done. CPA,
cost per action.
Okay. TOF.
TOF.
Okay, I'll give you a thing. A TOF lead.
It's tofu, top of funnel.
Okay. What's your U? I never use it. So what's
F,
tofu?
The F in the FU is funnel. So it's
And you call that tofu? Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, it's tofu. Okay. Tofu, mofu. I don't call it that. Everybody else in the world calls it that, but you. It's tofu, mofu, and bofu.
Bofu?
Yep.
What is bofu? Bottom of funnel?
Bottom of the funnel, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Tofu,
well,
bofu,
you're
yeah,
setting the curve. Okay, so we're going to give you bonus points for that one, young man.
Yeah, if I wasn't here, you'd have a highly misinformed audience right now.
You're the man. Okay.
You're like spreading misinformation.
I'm the misinformation, disinformation marketing podcast host. Okay. MQL.
You're like patient zero spreading
misinformation. Well, when it comes to marketing acronyms. Okay. MQL.
MQL is a stage, funnel stage definition that stands for marketing qualified lead.
Well done. Okay. Let's keep going on our lightning round. SQL.
sales qualified lead. It's
right.
Passed to the sales team. The sales team has to agree that it's worth pursuing. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to go ahead and give you this one because you mentioned it already. CRM is a customer relationship management. Let me see. Oh, this is a, well, GTM. That's an important.
Go to market.
Go to market. Yeah.
Yeah. What I will say is go to market is becoming a synonym. Like sales people call themselves go to market leaders. Go to market is not just sales, but I've seen a lot of salespeople branding themselves as go to market. And I think it's also like this, there's a tension sometimes between marketing and sales, and marketing want to look like, feel like the most important, and have more control over the sale because they have commission against it. So go to market is not just sales, but people are trying to continue to make it seem like that. If you're in marketing, you know what I mean.
CMS.
It's a content management system. It's typically like it used to be WordPress and Drupal, for example, but it has recently become much more dominated by Webflow, and to an extent, Framer might be coming in the picture.
Yeah,
less mature.
Framer's great. It's pretty cool.
But I will say content management system can go beyond just a web thing. I mean, like at Yahoo, we had built our own custom one. It's like a huge, monstrous, humongous system. But basically, it is something where you can publish to a website. Mm. Typically, you know, your blog is the main component of your CMS. You know, you're changing web pages and this and that. But your website is on a CMS and typically is associated with the website and blogging.
SaaS.
Yeah, SaaS is two A's in the middle.
SaaS, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Software as a service. Software as Very a service good. Really is just the demarcation is when software was installed on machines, what they call on premise, versus being able to
usually had something called a perpetual license, right? You bought it and you had it forever. And then you may get maintenance around it. But now it's month to month to month. It's usually a subscription model.
Basically, SaaS is software as a service and it's delivered over the cloud to the browser.
All right. Well, so we could do some more general ones here. I think these are important that marketing people need to understand. MVP.
Yeah.
You know that one?
So much about this. Yes, I do. There's so much about this, but it's a minimum viable product.
Well done. Yeah. And that usually involves, again, if marketing is properly involved in the product development process, we produce something called a PRD, sometimes called an MRD, a marketing requirements document, or a product requirements document. We hand that over to the product management team. They turn it into a PRD, and then they hand that over to engineering, which turns it into an FRD, a functional requirements document, yada, yada. Okay.
You're describing an unusual world with respect to tech. Typically, product people are just working on the product and they're doing PRDs and they're not consulting marketing at all.
Right. Well, and we've had this discussion before, like, should the product management function report into marketing?
No.
And I think I've told you, oh, no, really?
Absolutely not. Nope.
In an ideal world. Yeah. Well, I just believe in businesses driven by the market, not, you know, what, they're not science experiments. Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah, what I will
so
say
now you were criticizing me for like siding with sales, and now you're siding with product.
Product is its own organization. Engineering shouldn't report to product, and product shouldn't report to engineering. And on the go to market side, same with sales and marketing, they should not report to each other. They should be equal. For me,
true, but I just don't. I know that, for example. Yeah, I know, again, we've had this discussion before, but
what we call product. John DeLorean at General Motors, you know.
No. At Apple right now, what is typically called product management is under the marketing team because they're driven by business concerns, not what's the next whizzy tech coming out, right? And I just don't think businesses should be science projects. I think businesses should be businesses driven by the needs of the market. And if marketing's doing its job, and you said this before, you're looking out like, what do we need to be as a business, not just 3 months, 6 months down the line, but 9, 12, 24 months down the line. And that means you're defining the business by market needs. I'm not saying that it's just like you always want sales prospecting. Marketing shouldn't be the only ones generating demand. It's great that the sales guys prospect and go out. And I'm just saying that product team should not be driven by the next shiny object that the engineering team thinks up. Listen, there are way smarter, way more powerful people thinking about this and going through this right now. But I swear to God, if you look at all these chat bots and the AI stuff coming out, I just don't think anybody's really thought about what the hell is this for. It's all still a very cool, shiny demo. And it's only those places where there's a pain point through which the LLMs are an underlying enabler that I find any value and business proposition around this technology wave. We've seen this before. You know, the whole Web3 thing, there's definitely value in blockchain technologies, no doubt whatsoever. Nobody has really defined in a massive way how that comes together to provide anything more than certain point solutions to create value for users, whether that be a business or a consumer. Anyway, my point
there's
is
there's a heavy overlap. There's a gap between product management and product marketing, that part of it. And so I think that because the product manager is defining strategy, roadmap, features of the product, and so on,
they should report to the VP of marketing. Yeah.
No, that's like, that's my point is that's what they're doing. It's a very product oriented thing, but they're doing it to meet the needs of the customer and to align with business objectives. And so that's where you end up overlapping a lot with the strategy. I've sat more in my career at the intersection of product management, product marketing. First of all, it depends on the industry and the category. And I tend to find product management generally, because there are actually finer slices of it, program management and so on, they're closer to the engineering team. They work closely with the engineering team to deliver a certain features, prioritize what should be built or fixed or whatever. And product marketing is tends to be more about the go-to-market strategy and promotion and campaign right. And stuff.
In tech. In tech.
Well, yes, I'm.
You were in CPG. You know,
correct.
You were essentially a product manager for beef jerky. You know that you drove the business. You were the CEO of the business as a product manager. You weren't called product marketing managers. That's only a tech thing.
I know. But because I'm working in tech, there is a real blend and a spectrum. If you're in consumer packaged goods, yes, then you are. Then the brand manager is usually what they're called, or the marketing manager. They're in charge much more of a business. That's why I made the joke about John DeLorean, who started out at General Motors, and he's credited with, you know, coming up with a lot of very cool cars and big sporty muscle cars in the 60s that were a big deal. That's how he became kind of a big deal and then started his company, DeLorean. But my point is, in marketing, in classic Procter & Gamble, General Mills, Haynes, Frito-Lay, those kinds of companies, then marketing is much more the driver. In tech, because of the complexity of it and because you have to work so closely with production, with development, product management can tend to have a lot of influence. And they also think about the business a lot. So it just really depends. It depends on you and your partnership and how it evolves in a company. But in tech, it's very different.
So, Peter, you got under defining this alphabet soup, these acronyms, of which there are many more that we did not get into, a score of 33 bajillion million. Congratulations. And in terms of on defining these acronyms accurately, it was close. It was 101. So congratulations, you've won.
But you didn't ask me things like KOLs, key opinion leaders. You didn't ask me a bunch.
Well, I was going to answer the hardest one here, GDPR.
GDPR, it's privacy guidelines, but general.
I'll give this one to you because it's very hard.
General privacy. Oh, so I have to think about it. I worked on this quite a bit, so
yeah, I know I've run into it.
It's sorry, yeah. I don't know. It's general data protection regulation.
You just looked that up.
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
I didn't. But, I forgot. I just know the acronym. I didn't realize it was General Data Protection Regulation. But
more yeah. importantly, though, it's whether or not you can cookie a user without consent in Europe,
right.
And it's even difficult if the user is from Europe, but in the U.S. technically, you're still not supposed to.
This has garnered you 6 more points.
This is by the way, this is a long, crazy topic, but it is affected. You know, the use of data for advertising, which is a humongous business, you know, we're talking about close to $1 trillion business, is it has been rocked by data regulations. Mobile by Apple doing some stuff, deprecating what's called the IDFA.
Yeah. The ATT. Yeah.
App tracking transparency is because they deprecated the IDFA, or the de facto deprecated the IDFA, which is the identifier for advertising system that they created so that you could know who you're advertising to.
Yeah. We should have put that here in our thing. All right. Well done. You've passed.
I'll ask you one.
Wait, what? No, I don't know any of this stuff. Oh, jeez.
Well, okay. But I'll ask you one that is controversial, meaning like it can mean different things. So this is the most basic one, but name the 4 C's and the 4 P's.
Well, the 4 P's I know: product, price, place, promotion. And the 4 C's, when I use that, it's in the context of one of the 4 P's, which is pricing. How do you determine pricing? And you look at your costs, your competition, and your customer, meaning what will your customer bear? What are your costs to produce it? And then what's the competition charging? And you take those 3 C's to factor into your pricing strategy.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, the way I learned it, you know, the way you learn it from a strategy, marketing strategy thing, and if you take business classes, is customer, competition, cost, and capabilities. And it is like the first
thing. Oh, there's 4 C's. Like, what's capabilities?
Capabilities is what your company can do. Your core competencies, your capabilities.
Ah.
So it's like, who's your customer? Who's competing for that? What's the cost of delivering that? And what are your capabilities as a company? Because the capabilities then lead into your differentiation and positioning, right? What are we good at?
Okay. Yeah,
but it is a strategic, it's what you start with before you get into more of the more tactical 4 P's. And, you know, like everybody does it slightly differently. It's kind of like, you know, grandma spaghetti sauce in Italy, I think.
So. Yeah, exactly. All right, Peter, great show. Do you want to read us out?
I do. Thanks to our audience for listening. Our editor, Lorenzo Fernandez Kopek at Peak Bound Studio, for making us sound and look great. Our marketing maven, Ian Robinson Lambert, for getting the word out. Ariana Acevedo for our brand and graphics. And of course, Eric Widener, the president of AMA San Francisco chapter, for presenting this podcast.